You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. I am on the phone with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi. We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers. We host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. Obviously, not a lot's going on in the school buildings right now. And we are not going to be interviewing somebody else today. We are both on the phone. We are not in the studio. We are social distancing. And rather than interviewing a guest, the two of us are just going to have a conversation. And our plan is that I will be the one primarily asking questions, and Rachel will be the one primarily answering, although we can certainly switch roles if that feels sort of natural to do. So
yeah, I think we will.
Yeah, that's fine. So how are you doing? How have you been since this whole shutdown of the schools started?
Well, it's been pretty up and down. I actually went into home quarantine a little bit early because I had a mild respiratory infection, and the doctor suggested I stay home. And so I spent about 4 or 5 days in my bedroom separated from my husband. But I never got a fever. And because we have no real widespread testing here, I don't know. I had many of the mild symptoms. So it's hard to say. How about you?
Well, I've physically have been staying healthy. I've been taking the social distancing seriously, really, since it began. When I went to do my grocery shopping, I was really thoughtful even that first week before a lot of people were talking about it, about how to go in and do my shopping and stay away from people and keep my hands clean and wipe everything down and wipe everything down when I got home. So yeah, I've been keeping healthy, haven't had any symptoms. Nobody in my family has at this point. So yeah. What about mentally, emotionally? How is this impacting you? What have you noticed?
Yeah, it's been pretty difficult. I think, you know, many layers of anxiety, anxiety just on a personal level about possibly being sick and getting my husband sick, and then on a much larger scale, you know, just seeing how poorly this has been managed on a federal level and knowing that results in unnecessary deaths, worrying about people without insurance, who are losing their jobs, who are food insecure, who are homeless. I mean, the list goes on and on. You know, I feel fortunate in a lot of ways about what I'm able to do sheltering in place. And it's just, it's really hard to see things kind of fall apart and to feel, to have no real faith in like people's ability to do the most they can to help people and to watch actual harmful, devastating policies happening or responses.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know. I have also just felt some sort of underlying anxiety, which sometimes it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly what those thoughts are that are causing it, because I'm doing okay. You know, teachers, we're lucky that we are continuing to receive our paychecks, and we're working now. We're working from home, so we haven't lost our jobs. So I don't really have that, at least immediate economic concern. So I think, yeah, I think some of it's just about worrying about the state of, you know, of the world and what's happening to lots of other people, and also maybe just trying to figure out how to do what I can do and how to do my part, and feels like a steep learning curve, really, just to to learn everything that we're supposed to learn now that we're teaching online. And we'll get into that in a minute. So, Rachel, why don't you remind me and tell our listeners, what grade do you teach, and where do you teach?
I teach second grade at Glencoe Elementary here in Portland.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing that?
I think about 10 years at second grade, and 14 years of teaching. I started in middle school, special ed, learning center teacher, 1 year fifth grade, and then second grade for the last biggest chunk.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize or had forgotten that you had a special education background. So listeners, I'm a high school special education teacher, and I was a school counselor for many years before that. Rachel, how about, talk about what you have been working on as a teacher. What have you been doing? You know, initially when we got the school shut down, unfortunately there were some teachers that were posting things about how it was all going to be fun and games, and they were going to Hawaii, and it was party time, and kind of gave some teachers a bad name, I think.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. I think it was just a small number. It probably got blown out of proportion. But anyway, we've kind of gone through these, I would say, maybe three phases, one being, okay, school is shut down, and there's no plan at all. That was really mostly that week before spring break. And then we went to supplemental learning, and then we went to distance learning, which is where we're at now. So tell us what you have been doing, what kinds of things you've been working on.
I think with the first, the initial shutdown was just an extra week before spring break. And I can't remember. Did the April 28th happen during spring break or right before? Anyway, I initially, before I knew that we were going to be out for a long time, I went on. We have these different apps that our district uses for online learning, these learning apps, and I went on one because I knew that you could make videos, and I was in the middle of reading a novel out loud to my class, so I thought it would be fun and just a way to connect to film me reading the novel and asking them to do a simple response just as a way to stay connected. And then when we went to the supplemental and even the distance, it turned out that that app was the main platform for K through kindergarten through second grade. And
so you chose the right one.
I chose the right one. It was a lucky guess. And so I had started a little bit of experimenting and learning how to use it because I didn't really know how to use it. And I had gone through the process of reaching out to my parents and the whole back and forth of how to get their kids on. And, you know, that took many, many, many emails and tracking down little sign-in sheets and, you know, their student sign-in codes and everything. So I kind of was a little ahead of the curve on that, which was nice because I felt a lot more comfortable going into the supplemental and then distance learning. But honestly, it's been pretty, it's been a lot of work.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was just a huge learning curve and very different for different people with how to use all these online platforms and really have to rethink how you're designing instruction. It's not anything close to what we do in the classroom. And it's not anything close to the kind of learning that happens when kids are interacting and responding to each other. You know, that collective aspect of learning is so, so important. So this feels very fractured, and it feels more like interacting just one-on-one with the child, which I guess has its own benefits, but it does not feel anything like the kind of experience that we get in our classroom, for sure. And I know it's very different for high school. Maybe you could talk about what that looks like at your grade level.
You know, I can't even talk about really what it looks like at my grade level because I think it's different based on different departments and even within that, different teachers. You know, they're all different. I mean, there have been some agreed upon things like you talked about in terms of the platforms that we can use and some platforms that we shouldn't use because of privacy issues and other things. But some teachers have already been using those and are just jumping right in and doing things, and others are, you know, are much slower to get into it. And then on top of that, you know, I teach special education, so we're also just trying to figure out what kinds of extra support can we give students. Are we still going to try to have, you know, virtual, you know, online IEP meetings? What, you know, so we're still trying to figure out a whole lot, and I don't know. Are you feeling like you're getting, are you making contact with, how many students are in your class this year?
26 in my class.
And how many have you made some kind of contact with?
I think overall I've had responses from, well, there's a difference between the kids and the parents. So I'm most of my interaction outside of the app is with parents because these are young kids without personal emails.
Yeah.
And I would say 3/4 of my class I've had some kind of back and forth contact. A few I have not heard from at all. And but of the ones that I haven't heard from their parents, some of those kids are on the doing the online assignments and interacting that way. So I know that, I mean, this is part of our challenge, right? We don't know what exactly are the circumstances in each home. We don't know the stressors. We don't know if parents have lost their job or if they're doing remote work and are just as busy as they were before, and can or cannot support their child doing online learning, or if they have the technology. I mean, I know technology is a huge issue. And I think what happened in PPS was older kids were prioritized. I don't know. I might be wrong about that. Like high school, and the lower grades are kind of, I mean, they're still distributing devices. So there are still many families without devices. And I think, you know, one thing that's come up, there are families without any technology in their home, without internet, and then you have families that have one device and the entire family is, you know, trying to use it. And obviously, if a parent is working remotely, that takes precedence. Older technology that doesn't support the platform of the online learning, I've heard that a lot. So parents who thought that they had a device that their child could use are now finding that they cannot, so they had to apply for a device from the district. And then all the other stuff. I mean, anxiety, stress, illness. We don't know who's suffering from what sickness, or in their family or friends. So it's just like a host of issues. So I'd say in my class, my online class, I don't think I've had more than 17 kids respond to a particular assignment. So I'd say like a little over half are engaging on a somewhat regular basis. So I can see when they work. So there are assignments for every day, activities for every day, and so some kids are doing it a couple times a week, once a week, and some are doing it every day. And again, it's just, we don't really know what support they're able to get at home. And maybe the priority also is emotional support and family connectedness and feeling safe, and, you know, there's all of that. What have you found with your students?
Well, first, listeners, if you're just joining us, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. Rachel and I are on the phone, social distancing. Our conversation is actually being recorded on Sunday, so a day ahead of time. Yeah, when I reached out to my students, I really wanted to push back on this notion that, you know, we really needed to get our students online and find out what devices they have and get that going right away. I felt like, no, I want to just find out, like, are my students even going to be reachable, and how are they doing? What's going on? And I have really, so far, I feel like I've really failed in answering either of those questions. I mean, at least I have some information now as far as about how many students I'm reaching. I would say it's about 50% that I'm getting some kind of a response back, that at least they've read something that I've posted. Whether that means they're going to, you know, actually engage in any sort of lessons, I still don't know that. That really, I hope to find out next week. And I really don't feel like I have much of a sense at all in terms of how they are doing what's going on in their homes. How many of them have parents that have just lost employment in the last few weeks? So that feels like a big question mark. And then I wanted to follow up on what you were talking about, which sometimes we, you know, at least in education, we have been using the word equity a lot, throwing that term around, although we don't always, I think, really understand what it means. But in terms of equity, you were mentioning some things, and it was making me think of, yeah, we're going to have a lot of children who were left behind, not to bring up the No Child Left Behind. but I feel like that's what's going to end up happening here, is that we're basically going to be losing, you know, whether it's 50% or 25% or whatever, we're going to be leaving a big chunk of students behind, I think, despite our best efforts. We should continue to do as much as we can do, but there are going to be students that really aren't going to be accessing the learning opportunities that we're going to try to provide over these next couple of months. And that's too bad. I mean, I think about my students who are all in special education, and I think they are going to be disproportionately left behind, and also students who have English as a second language, English language learners, they are also likely to be disproportionately left behind. So
yeah,
I have some concerns about that.
And students, especially at the high school level, that have to work, that are still
mm-hmm.
working in
mm-hmm.
Essential
mm-hmm.
services. Yeah, it's interesting because I also have close friends who are parents of students, and it's really, I'm hearing a lot, and some of the parents in my class, I'm just hearing a very different attitudes about the online or the distance learning. Some parents, like, and I think this has more been for, well, I've heard it a little for younger too, that they crave the sort of the consistency and the schedule and the routine. So they are very appreciative of the opportunity. And then some parents that are like, I can't believe you're asking us to do this much math, this much reading, this much writing, you know, every day, all day, and like try to replicate school in our home when we're dealing with all this other stuff, you know. So there's very different kind of reactions to that. I think most teachers that I know and have talked to, and this includes, you know, people on my staff, what we're concerned about is the kids and their families. So we want to give them the opportunity to have things that make them feel some sense of normalcy, a routine. But if it's too much, we don't want them to worry about it. We want them to, you know, their first concern is their immediate concerns in their home. So, you know, there is this kind of like, these are all opportunities for you, but that gets at the heart of what you were saying. Some people are not able to make the choice. It's not a choice, right? They don't get to choose whether to have these educational opportunities. They just don't get them for whatever reason, but some of the things that you listed. And yes, most definitely, this is going to create the same divide that we see with kids who receive opportunities outside of school. You know, anything from test prep for like the SATs to tutoring, online tutoring, you know, just all kinds of stuff. Parents who can afford to pay for supplemental activities, all those things that already add to our divide are going to be enhanced. But, you know, honestly, I also talked to a parent who hasn't had a device and her in their home, and her schedule for her daughter has been amazing. The kind of creative, ingenious, using immediate surroundings to create these like wonderful learning opportunities. And she's even recreating like our schedule of music one day and PE. I mean, that's how much she tried to recreate our daily schedule at school. So I also think, you know, there's a lot of ways in which kids can learn outside of traditional education. And so, you know, I'm not saying that divide or inequity doesn't exist, but I also know that there are people who are doing creative things to try to work within that.
Yes. Yeah, well, I think absolutely there are some, or at least potentially some nice things that can come out of this. And also it can really point out all of the pitfalls of distance learning or virtual learning. And that's important to document that too, because there are people out there that would love to see us just continue to do that and that be what public education is, because then we could get rid of teachers and school buildings. And so, well, so let's document all the ways that it really doesn't work. We only have about 2 minutes left, Rachel.
Whoa, it went so fast.
So, any sort of closing thoughts that you have about educators organizing or anything in terms of that? Obviously, a lot of educators had to organize just to pressure districts to close, because a lot of school districts were slow to do that and relied on us to really push them to do it. But go ahead. What sounded like you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I think it just sort of going back to what we were just talking about, the equity issue. I mean, I think it's super important, and I know that people have different feelings about this, especially people who teach or have high school seniors. But the idea that we're grading kids in this time seems to me so grossly unfair. And, you know, I think that is something to organize around and push, that, like, we cannot penalize kids for things that they have absolutely no control over. And so, and I, you know, this is especially true for younger kids that really need parents there to sort of guide them through this. Mm-hmm. They're not independent with the computer. They don't have their own internet. They can't do all the, you know, things that high school students might be able to do. But I just, even with high school, it's just, we cannot exacerbate the divide by doing grades right now. I think that's just outrageous. Yes.
Thank you for adding that piece. All right. Well, we need to wrap it up. So, thanks, Rachel, for the conversation.
Yeah, you too. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah. I want to also thank our audience for tuning in tonight. This is Stephen Siegel. You've been hearing from Rachel Haynes and myself and listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show. Bye, Rachel.
Bye, Stephen.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
listening to Prison Pipeline, and we're talking tonight with Alice Lundell from the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We're going to talk to you tonight about a lawsuit that the Oregon Justice Resource Center has initiated on the behalf of seven plaintiffs.